Hello and welcome to Nobody Wake the Bugbear, Australia's biggest podcast for the Mothership sci-fi horror RPG. Our first Mothership campaign, titled Ghosts and the Machine, has concluded, and this is a special campaign retrospective and listener Q&A podcast. I am Andrew the Warden, and I am joined by 3 out of 4 of our fabulous players. You may remember her as the voice of the haunted exobiologist, Dr. Cameron Elias, and the spiritual wellness coach, Buck Fernand. It's Samantha.
Hey, it's me. Hi, I'm back.
Brilliant soundbite. Also joining us is the voice of the cautious commander himself, Rian Prince, along with Tony the Toolman Beretta. It's Josh.
The Tony the Tool Man that did it for me.
You are a tool man. Or a massive tool.
You're a tool man. Hello, everyone. Hi, nice to be here.
And who could forget the voice of Doug, who played the family man, Dr. Craig Graham, and the surly spacer, Jeremiah Dutch.
Proud.
I know I said it's the voice of Doug, and we jokingly say that you've got the same voice for all your characters, but Dutch is actually a pretty good character voice.
Yeah. I've tried accent work, didn't work. I tried accents that I can do naturally, didn't work. So I thought I'd do something American because if I fuck it up, I don't care if I offend Americans.
Let's be honest here. There was a time where you did an accent. It wasn't bad. It was just the character was a bit, bit creepy. Yeah. We didn't like him very much.
Yeah.
Was that Mordecai?
No, it's me, your favorite character.
Oh, the Frenchman. No, that was a terrible accent.
Accent wasn't that bad.
Speaking of good accents, unfortunately not here at the table is John, the man behind Gravity Ball champion Gordon Goodshot Good and the God-fearing android Merkaba.
What do you mean? I'm right here, man. What do you mean, man? I'm right here. I got my good robo knees.
Insert introductory random rant about something that John's seen on the internet.
Yeah.
That's what he would say. Amount of time.
As far as human to female Pokemon relations, the Vaporeon.
I'm glad you remember that. Yes, although the finale of Ghosts and the Machine released on February the 16th, 2024, we haven't seen each other since at least that recording, which was on December 10th, 2023. Doug, a bit longer. How has everyone been during the break? It's been a long break, 3.5 months.
Yeah. Flat out, busy, working, prepping for travel, prepping for...
This is Doug, by the way. He's going Doug. First.
Just flat out, like, a lot of work. By the time you're listening to this, I will believe that I'll probably be back from my first trip.
What, next week?
Well, no, I'll be...
It's coming out next week. I'm going to have to hammer this out.
Damn. No. If by the time you're hearing this, I will be halfway around the world. Doing uni.
Where are you going? And what hotel and what date?
Well, I'm starting in Italy and then we're going to Milan and we're going to be at XY. Yeah. And then work, uni, planning shit, getting life sorted, housing, all sorts of crap.
Yeah.
It's all happening.
It's tough being an adult, isn't it?
Fucking is.
Going on overseas holidays and
seeing
the world.
Lots of Lancer.
Lots of Lancer. You've no doubt saw his stream of Lancer where he played as a character.
I did.
I didn't because I turned off within 5 minutes, but I'm sure it was good.
That's fair. That's
that's absolutely savage.
I wonder if by the time we're hearing this, we'll and this is just far out prediction to make Doug feel uncomfortable, but will you also be engaged?
We will see.
Don't say this because if this is coming
out
next week.
Well,
Josh.
No,
is it next week?
She'll mind.
I thought this was she doesn't listen,
but your family listens.
They
catch it. So they
already know all this shit.
So you just bleep the whole thing, and they'll be like, "What?"
I bought because it doesn't matter. I bought a substitute ring. Not the proposal doesn't matter. Sam just looked at me like, "What the fuck?"
I think I should cut this because it might be sensitive information.
No, it's fine.
He's going to be in Italy.
I've got
to sign a release now, Doug.
I've got a substitute ring. I literally bought it today. Then, I'm taking it to Italy. I'm not taking the ring to Italy because that thing's fucking expensive.
Yeah, as you were saying before we started recording, you're taking a crappier version of all your valuables, like an older phone, different wallet, different laptop, just yeah. so it, you expect it to be stolen.
Yeah. So you've, yeah. you've got on a Temu shopping spree.
Yeah, pretty much, actually.
So you've got a decoy ring.
Yeah, yeah, it's, which is what she picked out. And then the idea then is, like, if I do find a decent moment, then fucking why not?
All right. Well, we didn't want your life story. So, Josh, you're next. What have you been doing?
And then I have this weird itch in my... Anyway.
Back to Doug on this one. You're going to be in fucking Italy, mate. You better make a moment. That's how that works.
That's exactly what I was just
thinking. Yeah.
Doug, put some effort in, man.
But there's a better...
It's called planning ahead.
But there's a better country. Like, I'm going to Iceland later, and I've been talking to a particular listener about this. We're going to Iceland later in the year, and there's so many gorgeous places there. So many.
Flash some ice in Iceland, eh?
Pretty goddamn much.
Yeah. Well, like, that's still planning ahead, Doug. That's yep. not, you didn't find Iceland.
He is planning ahead. Listen to the man.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that is planning ahead. Yeah, I'm saying, yeah, that's, yeah. Not just, you didn't find Iceland.
No.
All right, unfortunately, we've got no more time for Josh. Sam, what have you been doing with yourself?
It's been uneventful. Just life stuff. We landscaped the backyard of our house, which was crazy and not advisable in the hottest part of the year in the middle of summer during a heat wave.
You got that hot Pope reticulation?
Oh, not Pope, Hunter. I've learned a lot about sprinklers unwillingly over the course of this. Information that I'll retain for no reason at all. And yeah, just working, keeping on, usual stuff. That's pretty much it.
Brano's always exciting.
Yes. John, what have you been doing?
Nothing much. Spreading the word, you know.
Yeah. Spreading the word of Jesus Christ. Yeah, John's on his mission, so he is in contact. I get weekly letters, which are very nice, and we have correspondence. He's having a great old time. Obviously, there's strict rules, but it's bringing him closer to God, so it's all worth it. So, yeah.
Yeah, good on him.
And lastly, but not least, Josh.
Oh, yeah, hey. I am here. I've started what may end up being a master's degree. So that's a big step for me.
I thought you were going to talk about your illustrious streaming career first.
Well, it's about as illustrious as it was 4 months ago.
What are you studying?
Cybersecurity. So by no means does that mean I know how to defend myself.
Against the cyber.
Against the cybers. But, you know, I will be learning a bit more technical stuff, you know, learning about malware and detection and hashing and all that kind of stuff and salting, which I thought was for chips. But, you know, turns out it's for computers too.
Salting is the nickname for League of Legends players.
Salt farming.
Salt farmers. Yeah, so that's what I've been studying. And, yes, I have been streaming on Twitch and I think I've gotten to the stage where I've just created the Discord server for it. It looks, I think, the way I want it to. The stream's going as the way I want it to. I upgraded my RAM to like 64 gigs so I can, you know, not crash midstream, which is nice.
Yeah, that helps you run everything at once, right?
Yeah, because you've got OBS and you've got the encoder that runs for Twitch, plus the game itself, plus any chats, plus any like stream mods that you're running at the same time on Twitch.
We'll drop your name and then we'll put a link in the description below.
J Mezia. That's JMEZIA, and then you'll be able to find it. And then I think I'll just do some stuff on YouTube to try and get some more followers. But if everyone that watches this jumps on there, I think I'll shoot past my affiliate goal.
Yeah, 2,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think there'll be an issue there.
Me, you ask? What have I been doing? Well, things haven't stopped for old Andrew. I've got to make this show and produce up to 21 videos of the podcast. Namely, you've seen Another Bug Hunt, which came out. It's doing very well. Most popular one, you would say, Doug?
Yeah, yep.
It's quite well.
Yep.
I'm just telling you as information. Yep. Putting thumbs up.
Yes, I agree.
It certainly is. Yep.
Mothership is releasing as we speak in April. Wave one shipping has been charged and is being sent out to people. I've seen the mothership ship. So it is shipping
it's real,
finally.
People.
Shipping
it's real.
The mothership.
It's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. It's a pity our podcast had to start and finish before the official game actually releases.
It's a good introductory for anyone that...
But I'm sure we'll be back.
But in our world of binge culture,
yeah,
that now means you can binge watch slash listen to episodes from beginning to end.
And then get confused as shit right at the very start when we do certain mechanics and go, that's not the book.
Yeah. Well, people learn along the way with us.
Come on, let's get the creators into a, what do you call it, when they collaborate on things, a collab?
I mean, they did give us a, was it them that, no, someone gave us a shout out.
Well, they put us on the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
Pretty
that was
fucking
good.
Exciting.
That's pretty cool.
Drop some hints for them, for the development team to play a game with us and record that.
Yeah. I don't like remote games. They suck.
Yeah. Oh, they will have to come here then, Andrew.
Yep. Yep. They would have to fly here.
And come to your house in your living room.
Hell, we'll play it on a Tuesday night.
I'll feed them.
Guys, you'll be treated to the finest of Domino's. No special treatment for any.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. Why are we here? I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Over the last month, we asked everyone to submit their questions to us about the campaign. And I have compiled a nice list for us to go through. We'll also talk about our thoughts on the show. And you guys can also ask me questions here and there. And you can share your favorite moments. But before we begin that, we've got a few things we haven't done yet, which I believe are a few epilogue scenes for especially you, Doug, your characters.
Yep.
And little old Tony and Buck Fernand. Correct?
The man, the myth, the legend.
Are you ready to jump back into those characters one more time?
Always.
Yes.
It's going to be a long jump for Craig.
It will be. Remember to don't set your epilogue too far forward in the future, because then you might not, that signals you don't want to play him again.
Well, yeah, Craig's retired.
Yeah, that's perfect. I think Gordon retired as well.
Yeah, Rian retired. I think
all of the Black Swans.
I tried to make it as purposefully boring as possible, but Rian just straight up has enough and he's retired.
Well,
all of Black Swans.
I think retired. You said he basically outsources it now. He climbed up to management.
He started out in the Black Swan crew with that letter I think he had.
Correct.
Saying that he was knocked back for a commander position on some big ship. And so he's done a few missions now and he's like, you know what? I'm traumatized enough. Thank you. Someone else can do the grunt work for me.
So basically I'm picturing with that capital you got, the three of you have ownership in the company. Started outsourcing all your stuff. You don't have to go on these crappy missions anymore. You're all retired, all three of you, and the company's still going. I like to think the company's still going. Old Black Swan.
Yep.
All right, let us begin. Got a bit of a scene here. Let's go. The camera fades in to Prospero's dream. The infamous X-class port on the edge of rim space. A shadow passes in front of the camera, the hull of a ship. Not much more than a cargo container module strapped to an engine, it slowly burns through space towards the massive station. We hear static crackling as a message comes through the comm system.
This is Prospero's dream, hailing Raider vessel. Please confirm your transponder code.
Dutch.
Transponder receiving.
That's Doug forgetting the name of the ship.
What was the name of the ship again? The Ugly Duckling.
Correct.
We are the Ugly Duckling. Confirmed, Ugly Duckling. You have been cleared for docking. You may proceed to Dry Dock Bay 41. Have your manifest ready and your O2 cred stick for return visitors. Welcome to the dream.
Copy that. Dry Dock 47.
And we cut. We cut to the Ugly Duckling docked within Prospero's dream. We see seven people disembark and make their way through the hangar and into the clean room where they are then hosed down with disinfectant foam. The camera lingers just a little bit too long on the toned ass of one of them. They put on their clothes and are presented in front of a customs officer. Name?
Well, you said toned ass. I thought you meant buck.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm not even kidding. I thought that's what you meant.
No, Gordon Good's toned ass.
Oh, man.
This is Gordon Good. Checking in for duty. I mean, checking out. Oh, it's been so long.
Oh, yeah, I know you. You've been here before. Ain't got any signal jammers up there, have you?
Why don't you come and find out?
Yeah, you're a fucking joker. Next.
Dr. Craig. Hello.
I remember you too. You look a bit worse for wear, mate.
Just a little bit. I need a drink.
Right, who are you? Looks at Sam, his character. Dr. Elias.
Sam? Dr. Cameron Elias.
Yes. Remember that scar? You put clothes on, but yeah, he's a bit of a creep, this dude.
Just shake my head.
Who else would go there? Who's that back in the white?
Is that Buck?
Yeah.
Is Buck in the white?
The jumpsuit.
Oh,
still wearing it?
Buck Fernand. Buck Fernand. He reaches out his hand to shake his hand.
All right. Well, seems to be everything is in order. Any contraband?
Does he leave Buck hanging?
It's not under my policy to touch people.
Well, you're missing out.
Don't blame you. Manifest. Here you go.
All right. Looks through it. Everything looks in order.
Yeah.
You are free to go. Have we missed anyone?
Yeah, Tony and Ren.
Speak up. All of Josh's characters,
all of Josh's
yes.
characters.
Just waiting for the, and who are you? And who are you?
You got two more names I haven't got here.
It's stumbling out from the bag. You just kind of hear these, like, cans getting knocked out.
Hey, fuck you, man. You know who exactly I am. Don't pretend like you don't.
Tony, welcome back, mate.
Yeah.
I'll see you at the bar.
Well, maybe. I'll see you, but you won't see me.
Keep it easy. And one more person. The smart ass.
Don't know what you mean by smart, but Rian.
Yeah, I could have told you that. Well, this is everyone. You're free to go. Enjoy. Welcome to the dream. Yada, yada, yada. See you later. And Denta, the surly customs officer, waves you through. Remember him, audience? Call back from episode one.
The guy who frisked us.
Yep.
Remember who had the bomb?
Gordon.
Gordon.
That's right.
That's why he was like, ain't got any signal jammers up the ass.
The crew of the Ugly Duckling head towards the Stellar Burn, the premier place for rumors, drinks, and shady dealings.
And some other shenanigans.
Correct.
On the way, Buck is like, well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm excited. This has been hard work.
I bet it has.
Really hard work.
Bet it has. Hey, Buck?
Yeah, buddy.
Keep up the good work, mate.
Always. Let's go.
You make your way towards the Stellar Burn once more. You've phoned ahead and arranged a meeting and skip the time. You head towards the Stellar Burn, the premier place for rumors, drinks, and shady dealings. You head upstairs to heaven and into one of the private booths once more. And sitting there is a woman in a red jacket, Miss Magera Grimm, Mercer Special Operations Division, with her blue mohawked bodyguard standing behind her. She addresses you all. We see them speaking at length and presenting a report, handing over some equipment locked up in a small box. She opens it. Yes, fine work from you and your team. It's a shame to hear about Harper and the rest of the crew, but it sounds like they made their choice. As promised, 1 million credits have been deposited into your accounts. As for the safe return of the Taurus, excuse me, the Ugly Duckling.
I didn't fucking name it.
We have added an additional bonus of 50,000 credits each to your sticks. You have satisfied your contracts and are now relieved. Obviously, the NDA will remain in effect. You've done good work here. Looks across at Rian and the other leaders of the Black Swan. I will definitely recommend you for further missions in the future. Keep your comms open. You will be hearing us from us again.
While I've got you here, you got any points of contact in them troubleshooters?
Well, of course, you, Miguel Moreno.
Yeah, I need to grease some palms and meet some people.
We may be able to arrange it if you're looking for further work. We will contact you. Keep your cred stick handy.
Copy that.
And she dusts off and walks out. I'll leave you to it. You obviously have your own internal accounts to manage. And you see them walk out. We see Megara and her bodyguard leave the private booth, and the camera fades out, and we see Rian, Prince, Tony Beretta, Jeremiah Dutch, Buck Fernand, Gordon Good, and Dr. Craig Graham converse.
And Dr. Elias.
And Dr.
Cameron Elias. And Dr. Cameron Elias converse. Sorry, Sam.
That's fine.
And Tony Beretta.
Hey, he said I Tony. Said that. He said Tony.
And Gordon Good.
You'll see Dutch will just grab his cred stick, look up at everyone, tip his hat and go, "That was fucking awful. I'll see you guys around." Just walks out.
Just flat out takes his money.
Buck's like, wait. We had a big discussion about if we can all cast our minds back to the episode where Buck got involved, and there was a discussion about how funds were going to be dispersed that went on for an uncomfortable length of time.
You just see them arguing again?
Yeah.
Did they say $1 million into each of our accounts?
No, it was $1 million in total to Black Swan.
Oh.
And then that was distributed in a subcontractor.
We signed paperwork.
Remember, we went all through this?
Oh, God.
And it was like a sub. So you guys got to, the four of you, Elias, Gordon, Dr. Craig, and Rian Prince, you got 250 each. So that's the $1 million. And then from there, you organized different rates for everyone. It's a whole shebang. Anyway.
Yeah.
He looks at, who did he make that? It was Gordon, wasn't it? Gordon was the one that got him on?
I picked you up.
Yeah. We made our deal. You know my amount. You'll find me downstairs. He just turns and walks.
Sorry about the whole Merkaba thing.
Yep.
I was going to say, he was on the screen just before. I was going to be like, he's alive.
He's here.
And we fade out as you sort out your accounts. And that's the last scene of the group. They all split their separate ways. And similarly like before, as we pull out for an epilogue for our characters, we focus in on one of these that we haven't seen yet. Who wants to start?
I've got mine.
Yeah.
Queued up.
All right.
I don't know if you've got this music that you've chosen queued up.
I have. It's playing.
This isn't the Sopranos theme song.
I wasn't licensed
Woke
for that.
Woke up this morning. There you go.
For Tony, the stars above Prospero used to resemble opportunity. But tonight, the opportunity was represented by the name of a ship, the Vostok. Tony Beretta's silent vigil in the docking bay, lit only by a familiar warm glow of his cigarette. He never did replace the eye. If you were to check the security inside of that ship, that is, if Tony hadn't messed with it, you would have seen evidence of Tony moving with purpose, his steps quiet but determined. You would have seen him enter Armand's quarters, a room that felt too sterile, too impersonal. On the desk, he places a golden rat, and next to it, a tin of beans. Unremarkable, yet heavy with meaning. Again, a shame the cameras weren't working. Let's see if you'll remember. He lingered for a moment, fixed his gaze on the items left behind, items that held power to unravel a man's sanity, then left. As Armand returns to his quarters, his eyes fall upon the golden rat and tin of beans. His breath stops, a flood of memories rushing back. The deep, the androids, the endless corridors, the haunting voice of the monarch. His hands shake. He reaches out and makes contact with the cold metal of the rat. His mind begins racing with paranoia. No. I'm still me, damn it. He never really shook that feeling that maybe he wasn't himself. Panic sets in, a rising tide that threatened to consume him whole. He stumbles out of his room, his mind whirring a doubt of fear. Tony watched from afar as Armand fled the Vostok, his figure a blur of desperation. He took a deep breath, the weight of his actions settled in his chest. With a flick of his wrist, he sends his cigarette spinning out into the darkness, its light extinguished as it hits the ground, pulls out a small book, worn, weathered, and crosses out a name. The Book of Grudges, a family tradition, but for Tony, it was more than that.
A ledger of debts paid and due settle. One less debt in the universe. Donnie turns and walks away, his silhouette blending into the shadows. Prospero's dream was a place of beginnings and endings, and for Tony, it was time to find a new beginning.
Can we fade out? To new beginnings.
To new beginnings.
Cheers.
And he doesn't replace the eye because he doesn't want any robotics in his head after that fucking
the cyberware.
Yeah.
So you got back to Prospero. You tracked down the Vostok as they were heading back to Prospero. And you smuggled aboard and left a little message for Armand.
Never fucking forget.
Never fucking forget, brother. Very good. Who's next?
Is yours all prepared, Doug?
I just need to find the verse.
Okay. Well, mine's very not as deep and meaningful, if you can imagine, for Buck. So he's suddenly come into all of this money again, right? Having lost his fortune from the Year of the Rat. That was the name of the ship, right? It was the Year of the Rat?
Sure was.
Okay, yeah. So having lost all of his earnings from completing the mission on the Year of the Rat in that horrible juice marketing scheme, he manages to convince Dr. Elias to give him this synth skin with the crystals growing out of it.
The purple flesh.
Yes, the purple flesh. Because Buck has this ingenious idea that perhaps there are some anti-aging or youthfulness qualities within this crystalline skin. And he uses his newfound funds to further that research. He opens a company. The company's name is Gloop. And he begins to market and sell anti-aging products derived from the crystalline purple synth flesh. The testing is ongoing. He becomes so engrossed in this business that he creates a whole line of products, candles that smell like body parts. There are injectables that he designs, and he becomes extremely addicted to those himself.
Edibles and injectables.
Yep, edibles and injectables.
All right.
That's and we're not going to mention that. There's all likenesses are coincidental only. There's the synth crystal egg.
The very,
if you know, you know,
promiscuous smelling candle.
Yep. And he becomes really addicted to these youthfulness injectables. They do have an effect, and he becomes sort of one of those people that are addicted to plastic surgery. Almost. He's full of injectables. He's riding high. He makes a lot of money on the back of this. And we will see if there is some horrible unknown consequence to this crystal synth skin unknown item that he didn't care to look into too deeply, but marketed on mass to people as a cure for aging.
Awesome. The perfect finish for Buck, I think.
Does he spray puffs of ozone onto his butthole?
He made a special mask that fits that he can wear at all times that perfectly encapsulates the sphincter and just delivers a constant stream of it.
It's called the airlock.
It's all the sun damage, you see.
Airlock.
And we fade out. Amazing. So he's still aboard the Prospero, still working for the Solarian Church and sort of converting his followers?
No, he's become, he's got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And all of these people trust and believe in him as some kind of leader.
And it's got multi-level marketing. They
correct.
Go and sell their products
exactly.
to people. Yeah.
Because it's a tried and true method. And he's at the start of the pyramid this time.
I love the, I could just picture Buck being not just a cult leader, but the head of an MLM.
He's come full circle. It's great development then. He started from the bottom and now he's running the scheme.
I love
great.
It. I love it.
All right. We fade out one last time. No, we've got Dr. Craig and we've got Dutch remaining. Who do we start with, Doug?
Cutting back to the deep inside a corridor, you see a man in, you see a person in red armor bending down to pick something up. The camera zooms in to a cross, a small little cross on the ground, and it picks it up. And as it turns, you see in this red power armor, Dutch. He hears a click in his radio, and a familiar static noise plays through, and it gets louder and louder and closer, where he would instinctively reach for his trusty spray bottle, he instead reaches for his shotgun. He puts his little cross away into a bag, stands up, locks a slug into his shotgun, faces where the noise comes from.
Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will feel no evil, for thou art with me. Thou rod and thou staff comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anoint my head with oil, my cup runneth over.
And he starts walking towards where the sound is coming from. We'll see what happens there.
We fade out. Dutch joined the troubleshooters.
He certainly did.
And went back to the deep.
He actually went into the deep. Shocking.
Why, Doug?
He's looking for MK.
He's looking for MK.
If not, he's going to just plug that robo fake god and send him on his way.
It's great how we see Dutch finally go into the deep since he had a quite breezy time along with Buck on the ship. I ain't going down there.
Look, if before he leaves for the deep, he gets a whole lot of product from Buck to sell to the Fallen and the Chosen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there's anything left of them after the big war that was going off, who knows?
The let loose of the Minotaur.
Jeez, things might have changed. And we fade out from that scene. See Dutch just going down a long, dark, endless corridor of back rooms.
Yep. And then...
And we focus on one, the final character.
A few years go by and insert noise clip of a celebratory universe, like high school graduation, cheering, hats flipping, yay, hoorah, rah, rah. You see Craig standing next to his wife as they look out, a warm smile on his face, watching his daughter graduate, knowing fully well that he was able to get her through school without moving anymore and get her into a decent university and know that it's all on her now to take that big next step. Very proud moment. He spends a lot of his retirement time with his wife in a nice little coastal little house, plotting between management work for the Black Swan and recruitment, as well as working at that university. He gave them a very, very polite donation to said university, where not only does his daughter go, but he has tenure, and he is now a medical professor, teaching new and inspiring surgeons and doctors the art of medicine, and happily ever after. It'll cut through to a scene where he's sitting there with his psychiatrist, and she turns and goes, "I'm glad you're all working out for you, but tell me, do you have the dreams? Do you have that reoccurring thought?" I'll be honest, yeah, the thought never leaves me. It never goes, but while I've been teaching, I remembered something critical, and that's the fact that if you think about it, we're not the same person we were 10, 15, fuck, physically 20 years ago. Everything's different. So whether I am me or I am one of Monarch's puppets, I've ultimately accepted the fact that everything I wanted or he wanted or whatever has come through. If I can live out that happiness, then I don't think I need to be scared of, am I really me anymore? Because ultimately, no, I'm not. I'm not the same man as I was when I stepped into that hellhole. And I never will be that man, but then I'm not the same man I was 20 years ago. I'm not that same bright boy that enlisted into the military and came out of that war. I'm not that same man that married my wife and had my daughter. I've changed throughout the years, and this is just another change. Drastic change, but a change I've accepted. And I'm happy. And we'll fade out from there.
The scene fades. And that is the end. There's a few characters we won't get to see the epilogue of. Merkaba. Harper Kerensky. And
Monarch.
Yes. A story for another time. However, we'll fade out on the deep. Fade out on the campaign. And I'll cut all that Doug just did. Because I fucking hate it. Well done, everyone. It was good to get those last things we missed last time. We didn't have the time, but I'm glad we got it in. And it was good to have Doug. It's good to have you here for those last scenes as well.
Yeah.
Oh, you can all breathe a sigh of relief.
It's over.
It's finally over. It's finally over.
We got through it. Who would have thought a happy ending in Mothership?
I don't like happy endings.
Don't worry.
The one I liked the most was probably Dutch, because it had a
bittersweet
foreshadowing
style. I like the old growth. I like the old stinger at the end of horror movies, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh shit, and it ends.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
As long as it's not, and the big bad guy didn't actually die.
Yeah, that's not too good. But that's kind of what I did. With you guys in the final scene,
yeah.
As we'll find out when we talk about it, which is now.
Hey.
I've got a few things to go through. Buck, you touched on artifacts.
Yes.
First. So I want to start the retrospective between us. Let's start with a little music fade. As we transition into the retrospective, as Josh sings some tune. What were you singing?
I don't know. I think it was from The Godfather or something.
Okay. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na. Is that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure you'll want to know one of the main bonuses, the main reasons why you were sent to the deep is the premise of artifacts. This is why most people brave the horrors of the deep is to get to this technology, this esoteric machinery. And it was the main quest was to go get this map, this astronomical database, which you did. But of course, you took a bunch of stuff with you for your own benefit. So let's get into that. So let's talk about the tiny purple crystals, which I believe we heard about in Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
They're drugs.
Not quite. They could be. So Buck might find this out later.
Yep,
through
that's it.
The research and development.
Or through the horrifying consequences of his actions.
Yes. I believe it was item number 30 to 39 was the roll. You discover tiny purple crystals which grow on pseudo-flesh, synthetic flesh, and act as a fungus with a connected hive mind.
So Buck's created his own cult.
Yes. So,
what I'm imagining is you're breeding this fungus that's just getting stronger and stronger and stronger.
Fuck's an endgame threat.
Until and he's injected so much of it into himself, he's become an absolute freak.
And I'm thinking, I'm thinking at a certain point it becomes self-aware.
Yeah.
Because it's reached a level of intelligence. Just one sample is worth 50K credits. And you've duplicated this.
Yep.
Doug's lost it.
It's been synthesized.
So
that's awesome.
That's great. That's
amazing.
Feel free to use Buck in one of your horrifying Mothership games.
Yes.
As the BBEG.
God. Oh.
So he's on the way to becoming this connected hive mind.
He's the one.
Infested fungal it. Man.
We created a villain origin story.
Yes. Oh, that makes me so happy.
Yeah.
That just absolutely fell into place so accidentally and for the best possible person.
Yeah.
So if you would have sold that flat out to a curiosity. It would be 50K, but you kept it, developed it, and we'll say things got pretty weird.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
That's great.
That's funny as shit.
Moving along with the theme of covered lumps of things, 50 to 51, so only 1% chance of getting it, is the warty black silicone lump.
Oh, yeah.
Rian's favorite, Tony's favorite, I believe. Very interested in that, especially in the end game, is using it. This is what it does. When squeezed, it releases a stupefying audio. Organics must sanity save or be entranced for 1d5 rounds. So if you squeeze that in a bunch around a bunch of humans, chance to be stupefied and basically standing there doing nothing, entranced. And that was where you lost time. Two characters snapped out of it when you failed your save.
Oh, okay.
So I believe it was Harper Kerensky and Rian that lost time. So that was pretty interesting. Someone still had that, but I believe it was Merkaba.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so Merkaba's... It's lost in the pockets of Merkaba, maybe on fire. Who knows? That was worth 200,000 credits.
Ooh.
So it's good to make sure the person with most of the artifacts you don't leave behind.
Yeah.
Moving on. The penultimate artifact, the complete astronomical database of a previously undiscovered system, 60 to 61, only 1% chance. However, that was the basis around the campaign. That was the main mission that was chosen as a suitable thing that Mercer would be interested in. Its base cost is 5 million credits. However, for Mercer, it's a lot, hundreds more millions than that because of their advantage they would get over their shipping lanes and their deep space company. So that was one of the top artifacts in this story.
We should have double-crossed them and kept
stolen it. We could, but that's another campaign completely.
Mm. Map pirates, it's happening.
Map pirates. But it didn't happen. So get it out of your mind.
So shut the hell up.
The next, this is going to make you shit your little knickers.
Is this the one that we blew up?
Yeah, I was waiting for Sam to drink.
Is this the one that I wanted to take with me, but I think we decided that Merkaba had it?
Yes. And Merkaba did have it because it's the long rifle, 66 to 67. Long rifle made of a single piece of metal.
Rian wanted that one. Really
I do
bad.
Believe I've said this on the Discord, but I'll tell you again, it's beautifully crafted, perfectly accurate. So if you had let Merkaba fire that in that area, in the tunnels, in the sewers, combat 90.
Oh.
So he would have shot unerringly probably whatever he was aiming at. And
that's 20
million credits.
Oh. I'm fucking going for that. Craig is going for that goddamn rifle.
Yeah, fuck Merkaba.
Not Craig.
Dutch. Yep. Brilliant late game weapon. Oh, just shoved in a body. And you guys rolled that. It could be anything shoved in that cavity.
Yeah, it could.
It turned out to be the rifle, which is amazing. But as we will find out later, as we found out in the moment, is when you pulled out that rifle, it triggered the scanners. So it was put there as, come and get me. As something very enticing, obviously, to tempt you to put yourselves at risk. Basically, it was a trap, but very valuable one. Another artifact you came across when you were, of course, met with good old, what's his name? Where is he?
The armor?
Yeah, Marcus Sledek, I'm looking at. Marcus Sledek.
Oh, the Black Knight armor?
Black Knight armor. Marcus Sledek picked up this symbiotic power armor.
Ooh.
Sanity save or 1d5 stress as user becomes conditioned to the suit. No, sanity save and 1d5 stress as the suit melds with your body. Symbiotic is the word. As advanced battle dress plus vac suit together. So 13 AP.
Fuck yeah.
Without speed penalty.
Fuck yeah.
Includes integrated pulse rifle and flamethrower in the arm.
Shit.
The suit negates the first 1d10 panic checks, but then becomes permanently attached to the user. So this negates panic checks until the point where you can't take it off anymore. 4 million credits. But if you had tried to fight Marcus...
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a good thing we didn't attempt that.
It would have been hard.
Yeah.
We would have all died.
Yeah. Unless we used that rifle.
Which we didn't have.
You found
at the
later. You found as you were leaving.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been
however,
terrifying end.
If you had gone through that way first you would have had the rifle first. So there's so many ways it could have happened, but just ended up how we did it is how it played out in the game. But there was multiple ways you could have gone through the bathrooms instead of going through the royal court. And you would have found maybe it would be the rifle. Maybe you would have rolled something else. Yeah. No.
Probability is a bit.
That's the beautiful thing about these random rolls. Two more artifacts were discovered in this game. One very early on, 86 advanced logic core, which secretly contains a fetal AI. This is what the mine was attached to.
Oh, that's fucking, we blew up a baby.
Wiped. Blew up a baby AI.
We killed a baby.
We didn't blow it up.
No, it was trapped. It was trapped.
It was there.
The troubleshooters blew up a baby.
The EMP would have wiped it, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So
it was dead.
They got nobody to blame but themselves, and probably for the best.
Yeah. Androids must make a sanity save with advantage when interfacing or connecting to it, or they connect to Monarch, who attempts to recruit them to kill the crew.
That's so good.
And I would have done this all secretly if Merkaba had have interfaced with it. I would have rolled his checks myself and then let him know in secret if he failed or not.
Yep.
3.5 million. So the first artifact you come across could have been worth 3.5 mil. However, it blew up. There's nothing much you can do about that because it was either that or get EMP'd.
I mean,
you could have taken the hit, lost all your equipment, but one person could have saved the AI, the artifact. That's one way I think would have.
How would you stop the EMP going off though? Because it would have been the pulse of the EMP. That
it would have been one of you ripping it off and not having any time to do anything else.
Yeah.
So one person gets away, the other person just takes the hit.
Yeah, cops it. Yeah.
But then like, there's not too much gear that'd be completely fucked from an EMP.
Yeah, it's just up to, you never know. And you didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no way of knowing. Final artifact, 92, a pair of nymph androids, the Heralds of Monarch, they are called. Elongated necks, spindly, terribly beautiful alien faces, fear save when first seen. They are the Heralds of Monarch, activated in response to releasing the Minotaur. They spring to life and enact a terrifying symphony of destruction. Combat 85. I missed 3 shots. Very, very lucky, guys.
Mm-hmm. Holy shit.
And 4d10 damage, of course, for the claw. Wounds 2, 30 health each. You killed them both. They are worth 10 million credits. And they are destroyed on the floor. Probably not now.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty much shot to pieces. And that's all the artifacts you found.
It's pretty cool.
Does that mean the Minotaur just takes over these puppets and now the Minotaur just has these death machines?
You don't know? That's for me to know and for you guys to find out whenever we play this next. So yeah, that's the artifacts. Any questions so far?
No, I don't think so.
What about asking if there's anything you overlooked or missed that could have been found?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was going to ask a question about other characters in the campaign.
We can move on to that next. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But yeah, was there, like, I know there's things that we missed. We didn't spend a lot of time looking through a lot of places because the first place we looked through was the offices and there was a thing with an EMP attached to it.
Yeah.
So yes, I feel like that put the fear in us at that point.
So just the act of searching a room, you know, you say you want to spend 10 minutes searching this room, you roll a D100 and we get a bunch of options. There are artifacts in that option and that points you to the artifact table. So you could roll for an artifact just randomly in a room. Very small chance, but that is possible.
I think we've got insanely lucky and insanely unlucky at the same time when we pulled baby AI with a mine attached to it.
Yeah, oh yeah. That saved you from a lot of trouble because someone would have interfaced with it.
Mm.
Merkaba, you would have said, here, Merkaba, we found this AI core. Can you see what it is?
I think we were just going to sell it to the ghost guy.
Yeah, but you may have given it. You may have wanted to keep it. Who knows?
Andrew would have said something that would make us think to
plug. Oh, remember I said
do something about it.
I said it was the technology of this thing was above anything you've seen before.
Yeah.
I think talking to Simcoe, he identified it as being very advanced, very valuable. Let's go to the random search. That's it for the artifacts. I believe the first one we found was 98. Gordon, when he first enters the deep, goes to the magazines and lifts up the rubbish and sees the pictures of his wife.
Yeah.
It says here, your cousin, sleeping, but didn't make sense. So I made it, it's obviously meant to be a family member or someone significant. So I made it his ex-wife.
I think they chose cousin because it's such a, like if it was an immediate family, you'd be like, okay. But if it's your cousin, it's like, I mean, I'm attached to that person. That's so weirdly
and we sort of
left field.
It's Gordon seeing this, not it being there. It's just him mind playing tricks of him. He's so hung up about his ex that he's going to see her face everywhere.
I mean, for some people, the cousin is their ex.
Yes.
To Tasmania.
2D10 bends, which he took the brunt of. What else have we got? Does anyone remember what else they've searched for? There's one we forgot before that. On the hangman.
Oh, the shell. Yeah, what was that?
Plastic clamshell mirror.
Yeah, with something scratched into it.
The word android etched around the outside like a halo.
Mm. Was that just some dude having a freak out? Was there actually significance to it?
Well, because of a lot of the story is procedurally generated, it's random chance, but we make the story around it. If this guy was hanging and someone had stuffed a clamshell mirror with the word android etched into it, they're sending a message. Maybe they were sending a message. They hung the dude.
Yeah.
They shoved the thing that said android on it. So
think you can think,
this guy's an android. We hung him up. He tried to infiltrate us. Screw this guy. Because remember, he wasn't an android. He was a human.
Yeah. Well, the person that strung him up had the mirror that said android on it and then put it on there so they no longer had the thing that added them as an android.
You guys didn't know this till later. But if you would have scanned him, he would have been an infiltrator.
Unless they're dead.
Do like an autopsy on him.
Okay.
So I'm telling you guys now that he was an infiltrator.
Yep.
And yeah, someone found that out, hanging him as a warning. You guys didn't know that.
Yeah.
But it's something you may have remembered to do when you were less harried.
Yeah.
In the second time.
Along with Baby with a Mind, we also found all those booby-trapped goods as well.
Correct. The troubleshooter tracking device.
Yeah.
So did the troubleshooters leave a bag of goodies to track people?
Yeah.
That's perfectly understandable. Definitely. That was baked into the room. That's already there.
Oh, okay.
So that's good. But definitely that's why they put it there. It's to show the troubleshooter technology. What else can we remember? We've got the plastic clamshell mirror. We've got the picture of a family member. I believe.
What about the picture that Cameron.
Yes, 00, the battered postcard.
Yeah.
Image is where you were.
Because it was Gordon.
Place. 88 to 90, photograph of you as a child.
Yeah.
This is what Cameron Elias found in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You don't remember the event pictured. Ben's check. Picture of you as a child. You don't know. You were never there.
No.
So definitely a Ben's situation.
What about the postcard?
The battered
for Gordon.
Yes, on Gordon was the battered postcard. Image is where you were born. Welcome to Malibu. Enjoy your stay at Malibu. What is it? Apollo Malibu.
Yeah.
Yes. Dated to the exact day of your birth. 1D5 bends if Gordon would have found it.
Mm.
But you never gave it to him.
No.
Tony kept it. Don't know what you did with it.
But I did put it in the pieces of paper that we were all showing each other at a certain point. And there was a number that I assigned to it that if I rolled it, I would pull that out instead.
And this is what is great about the developing story. You could have easily rolled that.
Yeah.
And that would have just set off a different chain of events. So it's great how things worked out. The story is our unique story of the deep. And we've got a few more. Tony, two dead troubleshooters, 56 to 61. Nailed to the wall with synthetic fingers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember where you quickly dipped in? You said, can I search? Do you want to search this place? Do a quick look around?
Yeah, and all their gear was ruined.
Yep. Looted and all useless.
Yep.
Yep. So another message may be done by a group of androids because the troubleshooters are raiding them all the time, killing them. They stapled them to the wall. That's a good message there.
I thought it might have been Simcoe.
Yeah, because of the fingers.
Yeah. Yes.
Could have been. You don't know. What else we got? A corpse of Gordon Good.
That's right. Who found that? Was that me? Was that Cameron?
It was
Was that us?
Tony first, Tony, then you. Find
it, yeah.
As you were walking past.
On the weights bench or something in the gym area.
So you sure you don't want to check that room? I said, no, it's not. It's like, oh, who was there? Armand or Harper? Armand.
Harper. Because I think at this point, did we kill Armand before was in we went into the gym or after?
This was after. This was you going back.
Armand was in there the second time.
He was like, oh.
Harper, I mean.
What's that? What's in there? Oh, nothing. We've been there for, it stinks.
Yeah.
It stinks. You smell that?
Because Harper, we found Harper in the gym, but we killed Armand after we left the gym.
This is when you're about to leave.
So it would have been when we went
this
back.
This is episode 12, Alone in the Deep. It may have been episode 13, the start of that. However, a corpse is a member of your crew, aged 1d10 years. Gordon with grey hair. I don't have grey hair, can't be me.
He had no hair.
Yeah. 2d10 bends, and that's where Cameron Elias just got screwed with like 19 bends.
Yep. That'd do it.
Yeah.
And I never recovered.
This is the episode you weren't here for, Doug.
Yeah.
You missed all this. It was great.
I ended up with so much bends.
You just got absolutely fucking swamped.
And for those who do you all have your trinkets by the end? I think you did.
Yep.
So I think if you have your trinkets, your bends return and can go to zero. But if you don't have your trinket, you never get rid of 5 bends.
Mm.
So you always think in your back of your mind you could be or you at risk of failing a bends check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for Craig, the way I played it on was I tried to keep a count up until the point where I left. Obviously, I have no idea what happened afterwards. But up until a point, I tried to keep count of how many times a person was left alone, myself specifically as well. And I know of at least one instance where Craig was by himself, no one looking at him alone. And I think that fact alone is enough to keep Craig with that bends until he eventually just accepted his bends and he might be an android.
Having that 5 bends permanently for Dr. Craig, he's getting therapy about it and it's still in the back of his mind that no, I have changed and I'm a different person anyway.
Yeah.
But it's still there. It just lingers.
He'll never
fully recover.
Yeah. He'll never not think, am I real or am I not? And it was just that one single fucking instance, that one, not even a minute of just him turning a corridor, being completely alone and then turning back because of the combat. That was like less than 30 seconds, I think, in game time. Is he? Is he?
What? Who?
That's what I want to know because he's retired now.
I can't tell you. Can't really reveal that information.
He totally could.
Any questions about artifacts or searching and things you might find?
No, because I think we'll come back. There's a chance.
There are questions later, yes. Before we get into the fan questions, let's go just for us. Looking back, how do you feel about the whole experience of the campaign? We'll go through each of you. Favorite episode, favorite scene, moment. Is there anything you wish you would have done differently? We can go all up. We had 18 episodes of this campaign. We had episode 1, Calm Before the Storm. Episode 2, Pound of Flesh. 3, Ugly Duckling. 4, For Whom the Bell Tolls. 5, Heaven or Hell. 6, One Way Out. 7, Bad Reception. 8, The Rat. 9, The Herald. 10, Say Grace. 11, Papers, Please.
Yeah.
12, Alone in the Deep. 13, Heart of Darkness. 14, The Garden. 15, Knights of the Chosen. 16, Be Not Afraid. 17, Electric Shepherd. 18, Let There Be Light. Who wants to go first? Let's start with your favorite scene that comes to mind.
Me.
Sam,
me.
Go.
It's absolutely, without a doubt, I didn't say her name.
Yeah, I was going to say Grace.
Yep. With Armand, the reveal and the way that it happened, it couldn't have happened any better. It was so good.
Well, John could have decided if he had a pistol or a shotgun.
Yeah.
It was or a great. Flamethrower. That was the best.
I think the thing that shocked me the most is how many hints were dropped that my ass went straight over my head, because I'm pretty good at picking up on that, only for it to...
Let's play it.
So anyway, I guess I didn't treat her that well. But, you know, who does that? Who, like, who... I know she wasn't a fan of me saying that, like, he stole her from me, but, I mean, how else are you gonna put it? He was... She started cheating on me, and he started sending them money. So it's like... What do you want to do? That's a creep thing to do, man. He was, like, started paying for my daughter's education. It's... Like, who does that? It's gross.
It's any consolation. I, trust you with my family.
I don't think I was cut out for being a dad.
I said the same thing. And look at me now. Literally elbow deep in hell. For just to raise enough scratch to give her a decent life.
Oh man, what was your life back home?
Good chat, Armand. Good chat.
You talking to Armand?
Yeah. What was your life back home?
My life back home? Oh. There's not much to talk about. Grew up near the Ypsilon asteroid belt. Came to Prospero's Dream when I was about 16. Worked for the Teamsters a bit. But,
friendly folks, I bet.
Oh, yeah, you got a pretty cutthroat there. You know, they, keep a stranglehold on it.
Yeah, they put their hand right up my ass first time I turned up.
Yeah.
I tried to smuggle a comms jammer.
Like, right up in there.
Oh, yeah. They're a bit rough, but, if you send a few bribes their way, they look the other way. You can bring in anything you want.
I'll try to remember the next time. Maybe I'll call my daughter's stepdad. Tell him to shove something up his ass. No, I'd never call that guy for money.
Who, Grace?
Yeah.
Wait.
Her stepdad. Toby Schwartz. CEO of Schwartz Corp.
I don't think I've heard of that. It's not around the system.
No, but it's doing pretty well.
You keep walking. You go through the meeting room.
Craig's going to saddle up next to...
Just behind you lights another cigarette.
I'm going to saddle up next to Gordon and just whisper across to him. Did he just say your daughter's name? Or am I hearing shit?
I turn around, point my gun at him.
And you're looking into the barrel of an SMG as Armand has it pointed at the back of your head. First up, roll of speed.
Yep.
Second up. We'll see you next week.
Hey!
Holy shit.
I fucking knew I heard that.
Yay!
Brilliant. That's a nice little clip show we got here. It's not meant to be a clip show, but I just wanted to play that, Sam.
So yeah. Good.
Definitely
so
that good. Scene.
Yeah, 100, hands down. Great. Like, that was the best. The build up, the theories about him being an infiltrator.
Yeah.
And then the way that, like, Gordon did not twig on to him saying the name. And then immediately you were like, wait.
Wait.
John so was like, good. I would have been dead.
Yeah.
If Doug wasn't there, I would have been dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. What does that tie into an episode favorite? Do you have an episode favorite? Is it a whole experience? And if you list a bunch of scenes, I'll know which episode it's come from. Or we can cut to someone else for their favorite scene.
Yeah, cut to someone else. Let me think about
it. Doug, do you want to go to yours or Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I love that scene. I love the Grace scene so much. But I think my favorite was probably the first time the whole team, well, most of the team, like, came together. And it was the first time Buck and MK bumped into each other. They've been on the station for forever and just never saw each other. But they just...
Yeah.
He looks up, there's fucking MK, and he just... freaks the fuck out.
Points the gun,
goes, what the fuck's like, going
what the hell
on
is
here?
Happening?
He's already jumpy. He's already paranoid that the company, they screwed over that company. So he's seeing these three military type dudes bring him and MK together and dragging them off in a ship somewhere. Yeah, he was jumpy as crap.
Hey, who the fuck are you? Who the fuck am I? Who the fuck are you?
Gordon, did you hire some drug riddled homeless person?
This is making me look bad. What's your problem?
What's my problem? You see that fucking android there? Hi, MK. No offense, friend. But, me and him were hired to do a job a long time ago, right?
This is correct.
And that didn't go too well.
This is also correct.
And the last time I saw him, he was floating off to space. And
I have been,
Megab is like, this is not correct.
And, let's just say, there's a reason I'm on this goddamn station. So,
yeah, okay.
How about you all start telling me who the fuck you people are, right? Because there's no way that this is just a goddamn coincidence.
Well, first of all, and he's got his claw out and his gun in his other arm. He's like, well, first of all, there's three of us, and there's one of you, and you're pointing a gun at my comrade.
Yeah, well, if you think twice about that, friend, there's going to be two of you. So how about you start telling me who the fuck you people are?
Gun down first. I'm not having...
I'm like, fuck.
Do I get a say in this?
Shut up. Who are you people? Who the fuck hired you?
Goddamn Black Swan security detail.
I would recommend that we have this conversation somewhere.
No, yeah, I'm
quiet.
Yeah. I ain't going into no goddamn private area with you people. You think I'm fucking thick? Boy, I haven't survived this goddamn long just to have some people drag me off back to that fucking godforsaken place.
What the hell are you talking about?
We're just gonna go into this bar where we have a private booth where we can discuss the specifics with you.
Yeah, we were just looking for a crew.
Is there something that we can do to make you more comfortable about this?
How about you tell me who hired you?
That we can't tell you until we get inside.
Well, I...
Yeah, what kind of place do you think this is?
I love that scene because of just how, like, organic I managed to feel that into it.
Very fine work as a player, Doug.
Yeah.
Where you just saw that moment to inject tension into an otherwise
tensionless scene,
and it was perfect to finish on. Very good awareness of the situation. It's like pulling out the gun and being like, bang, like, what are you doing here?
What's going on? Yeah. Why am I now getting dragged off into a ship by military people with a guy after we fucked over a particular company, dealt with aliens and shit? Yeah.
I do like the scene when Gordon first sees you, because that scene is the first one where the listener realizes, or the audience realizes, that these are the characters that are coming back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So we knew ahead of time that the Black Swans were coming back. That was, and Elias being new, but we didn't know whoever everyone had picked. So for the rest of the people at the table, you didn't know, maybe didn't know that Dutch was coming back for this time. It was a really good scene. You head to the dry dock and you make your way through, and you just look out the window and you see your ship in space. And we focus in on a character wearing a vac suit who comes into the airlock, comes through, and you're just watching this, Gordon. Doug, who do we see coming out of this dock wearing a vac suit?
Taking off his helmet and sitting at his side, he pulls a little old school trucker hat out and puts it on his head and sort of straightens his back out, looking around for his cat, realizing he's probably at the bar. A young man, a withered man, got a little bit of growth growing on around his face, looking a bit haggard, looking a bit wiry. You see on his vac suit the name Dutch. As Jeremiah Dutch comes out of his work area.
You walk to Dockmaster Loesch's office. Gordon, you see this dockmaster, wizened man that's hunched over, coughing loudly with a can of soda in his hand, and you just overhear their conversation.
So, Ducky, have you finished the repairs? That job order's supposed to be done 3 days ago.
Yeah, she's done. I mean, I can't fix a Raider any more than I can, but she'll fly. She'll even jump.
Huh. Would never think you could shove one in there, but you're quite the engineer.
Well, more of a pilot than an engineer.
Oh yes, that reminds me. Someone here is asking for a pilot.
Yeah?
Yeah, some old dude with a bald head and muscly guy kind of thing.
He's just hanging around out there watching the ships come in.
He's got about 2% cone head.
Is he paying all right?
I don't know. He's just come here looking for a pilot. Maybe since your job's finished, thought you might be into it. I haven't got any more work for you for the next few months.
All right. Guess I'll get back in the old saddle then.
And walking up to you, Gordon, is Jeremiah Duck.
You a pilot?
Sure am. What do you need?
Pilot.
Well, I gathered that much, smartass. You looking for a jumper or a local?
Jumper.
Right. Well, I can jump. Where do you need me to go?
You ever heard of the deep?
Boy, are you fucking insane? You want me to go to the deep?
You're not gonna go down there. You're just gonna take us there.
Fuck me. Right, that's gonna cost you.
Sure.
Right. 100,000.
Fucking hell.
How much are we being paid?
250 each.
250,000 each?
Plus another 50 in normal funds for company funds.
70K.
75.
Done.
And I ain't going down there.
It's all right.
Done.
I'm Gordon.
Dutch. Or Ducky.
Take hands.
Nice. And we fade out.
He's not going down there? How are we going to get in?
And we fade out.
Remember how I said you wouldn't have to go down there?
I do feel like, though, bringing Dutch back, I'm not going to take responsibility, but I do feel responsible for that would be the cause that led to everyone else just reintroducing used characters. Like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what would happen if I didn't, you know.
Whether John already... Merkaba was already your second choice, and I think Sam Buck was your second choice.
Yep.
Oh, Tony was on Tony was on the list of characters you had.
Tony was on the list, yeah for sure. I hadn't decided on it until the last minute when everyone was like, Tony.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I guess it's Tony.
Yeah.
And I pulled out this random scene where I pretended the kid was my kid because I wanted to get out of paying something. I don't remember what it was.
You get paid in sandwiches.
Yeah. But he wasn't. He was just a consideration and right up until the very last moment.
All right, Josh, let's go to the favorite scene out of all the scenes.
It's really hard. There's a lot of good ones.
Have multiple. I'm gonna mention multiple.
Oh, I mean, like when we're in the kitchen fighting the ghost, that one's pretty good because, like, Tony felt betrayal from the other guys and he got really pissed off at them. But, like, it became a good opportunity for when everyone was having their break to start having these different meaningful discussions between different characters. Same as when we meet Armand, even though he's a dirty, rotten scoundrel.
Yeah.
You know, we had all these discussions about what we were going to do and, you know, cutting up the bits of paper for our names on it and trying to be clever about how we move forward.
Yeah, it was a very good system, and all groups need to find a system like that to double check.
So, I mean, I guess we had some good role play that was a part of it outside of just combat.
I like Tony's scene, A Bad Reception, where he first heals himself back all alone, and Craig's sitting there, and Tony just stops and hears this message.
Hey, Goldie. Gordon.
Tony, you open up yours and again get some static.
Hey, Gordon. Yo, I heard someone said they were a better Gravity Ball champion than you.
You get all this static and then something starts to come through.
No, I used to work in an apartment building, one of those mega structures, and we do maintenance. And, you know, I had to had the keys, and every now and then you'd walk in and see poor person hanging there, and you know, the world's a depressing place enough as it is, and you see people that didn't quite make it. It's never gets old, never get used to it. can you restore?
And this static begins to fade back in. That was a really good scene.
That was creepy.
Mm-hmm. Also, yeah,
that gave chills.
That was fucking awesome.
Finding the mirror and finding running through the destroyed androids as well was also good scenes.
Finding the rat.
Finding the rat was a good scene.
The whole gag of returning the rat.
The rat. Like the rat part of it made me laugh because I thought it was homage to Mouse and the Year of the Rat crew.
Yeah. For me, it was the whole gag. It was like, hey, you took the rat.
Yeah. You fucking noob.
You fucking loser.
Oh, they always take the rat.
Yeah, great bit of building the story. With this random rat, because it was so poignant with having Buck in the crew and us having played Year of the Rat. It made such more of a difference having that golden rat there. We put a lot more meaning into it. It's great.
Yeah.
I loved MK and the whale as well when he was in the whale skeleton.
Yeah, talking to Noriko.
Mm-hmm.
That was Heart of Darkness. We also had in that episode Noriko reacting to the yellow goo inside of Merkaba's heart.
That fucked me up.
That was a good one.
Yeah. The eating the Minotaur flesh arc for Tony felt like it was an ongoing thing that was like, I wonder what's going to happen.
That was a really good scene between just Noriko and Tony, because Craig was there as well, but Craig was there just saying, advising you.
Yeah.
That nearly didn't happen though. He was still pretty like, this is weird. It was just, I think it was on a roll that he went for it.
Mm.
The whole Minotaur flesh thing is so much fun to play with because you go there, here's this creepy-ass lady saying, here, eat this weird-ass meat. Naturally.
Yeah, mystery meat.
Yeah. Naturally, everyone's going to go, fuck no, that is not going to end well, only for it to end well.
I so wanted MK to eat the flesh.
MK, yeah.
But I knew that it was too much of a moral dilemma because, yeah, it would have been really interesting for it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why it didn't.
Mm.
One of my favorite scenes it's playing now is the first meeting with the Minotaur. You see one of the androids walk up and stand in front of the Minotaur, and it bows its head down to look at its chest, and you see the Minotaur, a tendril flicks out, and on one side it opens up, folds back in on itself, and you see an android port. And it goes down and plugs in to this android in front of it. You see the android slowly raise its head. Its eyes are now completely folded up in the back of its head. And it says,
"Welcome, children of Adam. I am the Minotaur. Why have you come to seek me?"
I just wanted to find Marcus.
Marcus is corrupting the Fallen. Marcus has tried to pass through the labyrinth, but I did not allow him to. He wants to start a war between the Fallen and the Chosen. I will not allow this to happen. Why do you come?
I came because... because Noriko said I should talk to you.
Please, hold out your hand.
I'm afraid, man.
Oh, that was great.
It's about 15 minutes long.
Creepy fucker.
And it's just perfection. Just everything about it. It's just an amazing sequence.
Be not afraid.
Yeah.
It's like something out of Courage the Cowardly Dog.
But it's horrifying.
Return the slab.
It is very, very, just the breakdown of Cameron Elias, all of your different reactions of, do I shoot, do I not, do I roll to shoot, Merkaba's advantage on whether or not he delivers the goo right then and there. It all made a huge difference.
Doing Merkaba's dream sequence was fun.
The next episode, that was also
yeah
a really good one. I do have a couple more, but we'll move on to someone else.
By my line of goop.
B1 with the goop. Clue.
Yeah. He turns out he's the slurm slug from Futurama.
But yeah, as you said, Josh, the dream sequence with the interface sequence with the Minotaur and Merkaba was really good. I like the meeting with the Minotaur first, more so because it's more improvised and had less time to prepare. Whereas after that episode ended, we had 2 weeks between the next one. I was able to think about what the dream sequence would look like.
I like the dream sequence because it was kept from John.
Yeah.
And normally John's in on the secret.
So he found dialogue. He was really enjoyed that scene as well, especially because when we rocked up to play the session, I gave Sam and Josh notes saying, do you want to be the first two dream sequences? It's all completely improv. It's just, here's what the premise of it, what the dream sequence is like. Just go for it. You're Ukti Brandish. You will be Cameron Elias. And it was great. It's like a descent into the levels of Inception. Sort of
tried so hard to convince him to deliver the goo.
Yeah.
So hard.
It's a good choice. I really enjoyed playing Harper.
Oh, yeah, great job playing Harper. That was really those episodes where you were lastly there, which was not the Garden, but the Knights of the Chosen and Be Not Afraid. They were your final two episodes, both 2 hours long, very movie-esque episodes.
Yeah. And I really enjoy it. I get a lot of fun playing a character that I have zero attachment to, funny enough. But, like, that's a little bit more, like, I don't want to say antagonistic, but it's a little bit more of a going his own way versus the party, you know?
Yeah, and you rolled a Ben's check, failed it by a few points, and got the Ben's check simulation, that you're living in a simulation.
Yeah.
Tied in perfectly to his psychosis.
So much fun having that.
That's also what Cameron Elias rolled when she was coming back through the churning gears.
Yeah.
Remember you took that thing and just threw it in to make sure it destroyed itself, and then you snapped out of it.
Yeah.
I think if you destroy something imminently, you gain stress. I know I didn't remember to play it out too much with Harper, but you did gain a bit of stress at the start. But
yeah. I think that worked out because it made part of me wishes that it didn't make sense to destroy it, and that could have been played out a little bit more because it would have tied in well with, like, Cameron losing it at the Minotaur.
Correct.
But because it made narrative sense for the thing to be destroyed anyway, then it kind of limited how much we could play into that.
Yeah.
But I think it would have been interesting to see what that would have been like if it had gone further than that.
Yeah, that guy who was chewed up in the gears, Josh and Sam, if you had taken him back, you would have got a reward from Arcady because he was a missing diver. And it would have shown that you have a bit of humanity within you to actually, he's dead and he can't be a risk. They can scan him to see if he was real or not, but it would have given you a bit of a clout.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. But you're supposed to know that. But it was.
And also, like, why would we carry it? Like, when you say bring back missing divers, you don't really think about, it was probably said like dead or alive, but you don't really think about it. You're like, what's the value of bringing back a dead person?
Correct.
Mm.
I mean, we know that the value is, like, maybe if they were an, what's the word again?
Infiltrator.
Infiltrator, yep. Then you could learn more about that. But in the pressure of the situation, you're like, I don't give a shit about that dead person. Like,
of course.
This is not going to happen.
Liking a body bag.
I like to think that at some point there is a cleanup crew that goes in there to find dead divers, but somewhere along the way, Monarch just created their own dead body infiltrator where it's dead by all accounts, and then they take it onto the bell, and then it stops being dead and just goes ballistic.
I've got the sewer main, but you can't see it. Let me just drop a. Got some maps here I'm showing to everyone. This won't be a YouTube video, but we're seeing it now. We're just seeing some of the maps that Doug missed.
I love the use of either dark pixel art or AI generated rooms that just give it this unworldly feel.
Yeah, the backroom style generation of the deep lends perfectly to the weird AI misshapen rooms. Like, you type in office building hallway and it's unsettling the details the longer you look at it, but plays in.
What's the name of it?
The liminal space.
Liminal space.
I will show you.
But there's like a word for like a fear of liminal spaces.
Yeah. I will show you the playground, which you didn't head into.
No, fuck that.
Which is...
That's for the AI children, right?
This no, not quite the children. The chosen.
Yeah, see the slide that goes back in on itself with absolutely nowhere to slide?
Mm.
And the two separate slides?
I think I would have...
Yep.
I would have lost my goddamn mind if Craig... Like, if Craig walked in there, fuck no, he would have flipped...
We would have flipped it
and probably set it
on going flight. On a slide.
Yeah.
So this is where the chosen are chosen. They can laze about. They play computer games all day. They play fun little games with each other that's relaxed like a resort for the chosen, while the fallen stuck in the
absolute hellhole.
Absolute hellhole. So it's just really fun if you would have gone there, but unfortunately, once the whole Marcus storyline sort of got rolling. It was sort of, they were aware of visitors coming.
So asking the forbidden questions, you know, all of that.
Yeah. So you could have denied the audience with the king and just kept on going past these androids. They're weak. You know, they're weak.
Yeah.
They would have just non-resistance.
Mm.
So if you had gone past the visitor's shrine to the left, you would have gone to the playground and just seen all these chosen comfortably playing games and unthreateningly.
Was the king actually talking to Monarch?
I cannot confirm or deny.
Okay.
Because that'll ruin, it won't ruin anything.
That's fair enough.
What do you think?
I don't know.
I think he wasn't. I think he was bullshitting.
I agree. I don't think he was. I think he wasn't. I don't think he was bullshitting. I just don't think Monarch gave enough of a fuck to actually talk to him and just programmed him to think that he is.
What are you clicking together?
That was me.
Someone's clicking stuff. Or is it teeth?
No, something's stuck. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
What about...
Eden. What? So Eden is a big area.
Yeah.
It's twice the size of floor one.
Yep.
And you certainly explored most of the right side, which is the gutters, and the tunnels and the labyrinth.
There were six floors?
Six in total, yes.
Yeah.
Five being off bounds because that's the heart of the station sort of thing. Hard to get to, but...
You know what I think happened?
Not accessible immediately, yeah.
Because I think you mentioned in the past this whole thing is set up to just amuse Monarch, like the chosen versus the fallen.
Correct. It's a classism experiment.
So I like to think, right, that... The first couple of times he did it as an experiment, and then from there it became a fun game, and he made the leader think that he's talking to him directly, but is actually talking to a fallen and then giving him or them ideas on how to overthrow the chosen to see what would happen.
I'll give you an answer that you won't like, Josh, is yes, he was talking to Monarch.
Damn it.
Then next time, maybe not. Then next time, maybe he is. Then next time, maybe they don't. It's what Monarch's doing. It's using it as a testing. So maybe he does have the leader talk to Monarch for one iteration. Then he wipes all their memories and goes, oh, okay, let's try it with no guidance whatsoever.
Yeah.
See what happens. So, yeah, it's one of those things that's very ambiguous until you can know for sure, which is more exploration.
Okay, I have another question.
Go.
What happened in the time? just leave.
Just leave.
What happened in the time where Harper was between being knocked out and in the cupboard? Remember, because there was a big hoo-ha about how you haven't aged any, how did you survive in a locker for 3 months? Do you remember this?
Yep.
What happened? How did this happen?
You got ambushed, hit over the head, and stuffed in the locker.
Yeah, I understand that, but there was a significant amount of time because the Ramirez arrived 3 months before, right? Yes. So then we're thinking.
All I could think was some time paradox weirdness because the ship hadn't arrived yet in the Bell, and then he can't have been there for that long, or they're lying about the ship not having been there, or who knows. Or
there was more questions raised than answered every time we touched on Harper being in the locker.
Yeah, how long was Harper in the locker for?
A point where I don't think Harper was Harper.
Logically, you can only survive around 3 days without this proper suit. So purely from physical evidence, you guys know that he couldn't have survived longer than 3 days because you would starve and be dehydrated.
Yeah. Yep.
So you've got 3 days. However, the timeline of them being him there in the station at all doesn't match up.
Yeah.
3 days if you're a fed, taken care of, fit person. So I think not a brain injured.
I think because of his vac suit, his vac suit was able to supply him with reclamation up to a point. So 3 days is what he would last.
He's also like comatose for that.
No, it's just he was weak. You obviously brought him out. He wasn't in good health,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You guys had to heal him on the ship.
So then it took 3 days for Marcus to infiltrate the Fallen and initiate a coup?
Not quite. That was when the ambush might have happened, 3 days. However, weeks passed before you finally went to Eden. Two weeks at least with Harper.
Okay.
Because remember you guys had, Dr. Craig had his surgery.
Yeah, we went back to the ship.
Yeah.
You went back to the ship.
Yeah.
And you took 2 weeks to recover.
Yeah.
You did two Benz rolls.
Yeah.
So you know Marcus had at least 2 weeks plus a few days from that happening to make his way to Eden.
Got it.
He's totally an android. Totally.
Harper.
Yeah.
You weren't there for the conversation unless you listened back to it, which you obviously have.
I've been planning on waiting for it all to wrap up, which it has. And then
you got no excuse.
Binge it.
Yeah.
Maybe when I'm on the plane.
Yeah, go for it. So I think we've all got pretty good scenes and episodes. Is there any episode that stands out anymore as a second choice? I'll tell you my second choice. My first one was Be Not Afraid, Minotaur scene, going through the labyrinth. The feeling of it being a labyrinth was there for you guys. I think you guys did know where had logic to it or not. You thought it was a body.
The ever-changing colon.
Yeah. You thought it was a body and you rationalized it being teeth and tongue and then esophagus splits into two ways. It was great how that came about. So that was a really good episode. And I also like episode 4, For Whom the Bell Tolls. That was good all around. It's possibly my favorite episode just because of the tonal change in between the first three. First three was a prologue. And I think the very end of episode 3, Ugly Duckling, when John revealed the goo inside him, jumping off from that into a new episode fresh, just changed the tone. And then things just started getting weird and it was my jam, like doing that. Because then you saw Noriko, this weird religious person. You heard about all this Minotaur. It was Arcady introduced himself through the comms. I love scenes where it's comms.
Yep.
And I love scenes where they change perspective.
Yeah.
And there was so much throughout the series of that where you decide to phone back into the other crew. It has a transitional phase where you're on comms, but then we move to their perspective. And then the other players are on comms when you want to go back. And I love that back and forth. And that's one of things I'll talk about when the listener questions about how the campaign was, the format was different from just a one shot. We were able to do things like that. It was a lot different.
Yeah, going from this accent to Tony is back and forth was a challenge.
And not only did you have to do that for having two characters in one thing, you had to do it when you talk to each other just randomly, which was really good.
I had to talk to myself.
Yes.
That was a weird one, isn't it? It's like so many moments of, these two would actually role play together really well, but I'm not going to sit here and talk to myself like a
fucking No, that's my job. That's the DM's job, the warden's job.
Yeah. I think for me, was it the second episode? Is a standout? I think it was one of the first three.
You name the scene, I'll know what episode it's from.
It was all the scenes where we were all...
All the scenes.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Where we were all like role playing together. We're all bouncing off each other. We're all getting introduced and like seeing how these characters are now taken from their one shot and put into this new situation. There's more like flesh to them, more character to them, more like history and story. And then seeing them with that nostalgic lens, but then also watching them interact and fit in this new narrative.
You are right with that because let's say the first episode, you don't want a whole half the episode be lore. You don't want to tell these backstories. You don't need to know the back. You want to, the story you want that you're here for is a story that's playing out for them that you're listening to.
Yeah.
Because Doug will hand me a novel about what happened to his character, which is great because that means he can insert that into the show as we go. Yeah. And I can play off it having Like, there could have been, if you had rolled that dead person, that's the guy you couldn't save laying on the thing. That's your friend.
Save me.
Yeah. So awesome stuff having that available as a warden. But as a listener, hearing all that stuff from multiple characters is really hard on your attention span.
Yeah.
But as soon as we got to the shuttle, Gordon, Rian, and Dr. Craig bantering it with each other back and forth, you know exactly what they're about. Cameron Elias slinking off on her own, not meeting these people yet, but still being in this along in the background. Dr. Craig noticing her, saying, "Hey, Scars, it's you."
Yeah.
And just things like that.
Is that me?
Yeah. Hey, look, it's Scars.
Yeah.
And Sam's like, I spoke too soon. You can see it all. And then just in the bar, you're ordering drinks, and it's just great. And then you finally meet at the end of the episode and then able to talk, so things like that. And then all the scenes of you recruiting each other, I really like that. It was good for each of you to not role play with yourself, but to recruit the other person's character.
Yeah.
So that was good. And technically.
And I think my two favorite episodes are the ones where I played Harper, Be Not Afraid, and what was the other one?
Knights of the Chosen.
Knights of the Chosen. Like, for multiple different reasons, I was sleep deprived and tired and not looking forward. Normally, like, every time this game comes around, I've never up until that very moment thought to myself, fuck, I don't want to go. It's always been, let's go. It's game night. I'm excited. I'm pumped. But for that game, it was like, I need to fucking go because it's my last one. I've missed out on the other ones. Mm-hmm. I need to be there. This is it. Get your ass up and go to it. And I needed to sort of get into a mindset so I didn't just be a slug through the whole game. And it proceeded to be one of the best games I've ever played. It was so much fun, so interactive. Like, I loved Harper.
Yeah.
I loved what I got to do with him. I just love those two episodes and how much fun they were.
I think as a table, unique thing about it is it's quite stressful, especially because of my attitude sometimes and everyone else's. But I think that kind of tension, real tension, works for the story. We get annoyed at each other. It's fine to have disagreements. We always do. We always come back and make it better.
Yeah.
And really, the listeners appreciate that. Every time there's something that we disagree about in the game, the listeners say, I'm really glad you kept that in. It's refreshing to hear that. That's what happens at my table.
Yeah.
That's the same old arguments about equipment that happens everywhere.
Yeah.
A lot of tables, they don't do any editing, therefore they don't act that way, perhaps, or they just cut it out.
Yeah.
And it doesn't they either
cut it out and make it all look like they're all happy Larry, best of friends type deal, or like, it's never just included in there. Or you'll see one big argument and then all this shit happening in the background.
Yeah, because putting, say, Grace as an example, very high pressure episode. It was the middle episode of a recording, so we called usually three at once when we're doing three, and that was the middle one. You know, big argument with the ghost. We're all frustrated. We all calm down afterwards. We all have a scene back on the bell, and we all sort of calm down a bit and get back into it. And then, of course, we have one of the best scenes in the show, which is Armand saying grace.
Yeah.
If we didn't have that argument, we might not have had that at all. So it's a benefit, I think, to have that kind of pressure.
And I think some of our best work has come post.
Oh, definitely.
Bickering.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good part of the show. So I think looking back on it, just it's an amazing show.
Mm.
It's my favorite show.
Mm.
Every time I edit it, I listen to it a lot. Obviously, I have to go through everything. But at once it's all put together and it's ready to be listened to, I just listen to it again. And just hearing it is fresh every time because I feel separated from it, as in I'm appreciating the work for what it is. So I think looking back, just amazing experience, favorite campaign. I know the Dungeons and Dragons campaign was much longer and much more essential because it was the first thing we finished. But this is also something we finished and equally is valuable to the whole experience, I think. So yeah, that's my favorite experience, moment, and episode. Everyone else have got their comments? You want to say anything more about the show itself?
I'd never played Mothership before, so it was a learning experience. But it was, I think, good to come in as someone like it was brand new because I don't have any bad habits. And I don't mind being the person to ask the questions. I'm sure that's helpful to people who might be listening and thinking about playing Mothership when Sam's like, what do I roll again for this? Or how much damage does that gun do? Or, you know, and I just learn better by asking the question. Like, I'll read it and understand it and grasp it. But in the moment when there's 5,000 other things happening that you're trying to plan for, it's sometimes good to just ask the question.
Yep.
So I think that was really good coming in and learning and then, yeah, obviously not being embarrassed about asking what may be construed as a dumb question.
Yeah. And they are dumb. Some are dumb questions.
Oh, yeah, some of them are dumb.
That's all right.
But, yeah, we approach everything with, like, the table has a really good sense of humor, I think.
Look, all I'm saying is I could 100% throw a grenade 100 meters before it explodes.
Yeah. What's a stun grenade? Favorite line. I should have put that on speed as a drop.
It's a stun grenade.
Yeah, add it in now.
Yeah.
What the fuck's a stun grenade?
That's funny.
That will never not be a sore point. Fuck, that annoyed me.
I was talking about that on my Twitch stream like 2 days ago. Ember had dropped in to say hi and like bringing up some old like funny moments because I was talking about like, oh, we're going to do some, you know, recording for the Q&A and it's going to be a good time. And I can't remember how it came up. You're talking about like some of the funny arguments and I was like, stun grenade does this. And then I said, you know, how ridiculous that we spent so long arguing over the rules of a science fiction space game on whether or not we were talking about a flashbang or Star Wars stun grenade theme.
Well, that was like a cussive grenade or a flashbang. And I was like, they're both the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
see your phases to stun doesn't release a flash of blinding light, Douglas.
Oh, God, I probably did sound like a Trekkie then, didn't I?
The last thing about this line of questioning, is there anything you wish you'd done differently? This is in the fan questions as well, but we'll put a little bit here. Is there anything you would have done differently?
I don't think I would have brought Craig.
Really?
Yeah.
You want to try something new? He was new.
Dutch. Dutch. Oh, sorry. Okay. Dutch. I wish I didn't bring Dutch. I'm glad I brought Craig.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like I had this whole narrative idea of Dutch that worked and it did work throughout the whole story, but Dutch did fucking nothing except for fly the ship, in my defense, is exactly what he said he would do.
Exactly. I'm not getting off this fucking ship.
Yeah. But I feel like I would have had a lot more narrative fun and physical fun if I had scrapped the idea of Dutch and just brought someone a little bit more. Someone I wasn't overly attached to Dutch.
Yeah.
But someone I have zero attachments to, so I can just
roll. Because you're attached to Dr. Craig.
I was fucking attached to Craig. Yeah. Craig and Krez are like two characters I have attachments to. The rest can,
I think having Jeremiah Dutch there worked so well with Merkaba.
Yeah.
Made it all worth it. And both of your stories progressed. You both got closure. Dutch talked through his survivor's guilt. Another perfect scene with the emotional music playing.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one.
It's a brilliant scene. It's about 5 or 6 minutes long. The song plays throughout. It rises at the end. And it's just about the last speech of Merkaba and that going down. And Dutch coming to terms with his guilt and letting Merkaba go again properly this time. Mm. And then, of course, he feels like he has to do the same thing and come back to try to save Merkaba.
Yeah.
And it came full circle. He actually did go back into the deep. It's a story for another time, but a good stepping stone. And Josh, anything you would have done differently? Characters happy?
Happy with the characters. I mean, I was recalling that my second character was originally, I was going to do an android. Mm. And I did remember thinking in the first few episodes, it would have been very interesting, but would I have enjoyed it as much because, well, just the nature of the campaign.
Mm.
but I don't know. I feel like I probably wouldn't have brought Rian and Tony in at the same time. It's just more work than it needed to be, and I didn't get to enjoy them as individuals as much by having them both there. Bringing them along was just because Rian had the biggest gun.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like the main reason for bringing him is he had the biggest gun and he was the leader who really could have just stayed on the ship.
Yeah.
It also didn't help that both the other soldiers were tagged out and they had no...
Yeah.
I think Tony was your main character and you got a lot of story for him. So I think that side of things was great.
Yeah.
But as you said, Rian suffered.
Mm.
But not so bad. I think Tony definitely
still did good.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if I had not been, you know, focused on doing a lot of the things outside of Pod, maybe I would have been able to put a bit more into Tony's writing, but I feel like I still did a good job with him. So I'm not too mad about it, to be honest.
Yeah, what you say in the moment becomes canon to the story.
Yeah.
So you sort of...
maybe some more chamomile tea around the table, yeah. But...
but you are building it as you go, so all good. Sam, any regrets?
I don't know if I'd call it a regret, but...
It doesn't say regret, sorry.
What I would do differently.
Differently, yeah.
So ragrets.
Ragrets, no regrets. I would have shot the Minotaur.
In that moment?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been great because...
It would have been good. I probably would have died.
No, it's pacifism.
Well, the androids would kill me. Something would... Yes. Something, yeah, you know, maybe not the Minotaur, but things doing its bidding. But it would have been good. I feel like I weighed the options right at the time and thinking about being in that fight or flight position. And then the third option being just sort of like exiting body, like not being there anymore situation. I think it would have been really interesting to have just let it rip and shot the Minotaur.
I can tell you how it would have played out as being the Minotaur.
Yeah.
And knowing what, having that situation being very, like, I was thinking grenades are going to go off.
Yeah.
You're going to shoot this thing. There's going to be all-out war in this small enclosed space. The 15 pristine androids are going to jump to the Minotaur's defense. Mm-hmm. If you had fired in that moment, got the shot off, the androids would have descended upon you, possibly hurting you.
Yep.
The Minotaur would have swept in and shielded you.
Mm.
They would have backed off and maybe healed your wounds. This is horrific for Cameron because she's just decided she wants to kill this thing. This thing comes in and saves her against her will.
Mm.
You would be saying, no, no, don't come. And it would come towards you and envelop you to stop the attacks and then possibly heal you and then slink back. Horrible experience for her.
Yeah.
And maybe leave you more stressed and broken.
Potentially.
Or resigned in what can you do against this creature.
Yeah.
But it really is... wanted to, in that moment, be pacifist.
Yeah.
And would have...
I do still wonder who was the bigger villain, Monarch or the Minotaur.
We'll never know.
Clearly Monarch, don't you think, or not?
Well
yeah. No, because right towards the end, like, we had this whole plan of getting the Minotaur out.
Yeah.
And then right towards the end, I'm like, I think he's playing us.
What did you think of this?
I think he's worse.
What did you think of the scene, the final interface with the Minotaur, where technically... None of your characters saw this, only Merkaba, but you as a player can comment on it. How it changed from the steel hand into all the different personifications, and then Merkaba came out and John was like, I'm starting to have second thoughts. Because this thing would change, interface with him. It was a beautiful young man, an angel, an angelic figure, because Merkaba was a Christian missionary. And as he started to doubt himself, he said, what's the steel hand on the wall? And the Minotaur said, it's me leading the fallen away from thing. It's like, but wait, the steel hand should be Monarch. And then this thing changed into a steel hand in front of him. Then it changed into Father Cronus. Then it started changing through thousands of different things, where it, like the Boggart does to match your fear. It's trying to match what you're most comforting, what you perceive it as.
Mm.
And that just made him scared to commit, I think.
Yeah.
The unsurety was played out as a character and him as Merkaba. Yeah. It was really good.
Yeah, I can't.
Should listen to it.
I have been trying so hard to, like, let it all slip so then I can come in
fresh ears.
As fresh as I can.
Because I just want to listen from start to end and just binge it and live it. And
yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So that, yeah, that is me. If there's anything I would have done differently, lots, but not because, obviously, not because I regret it, but for doing things differently. But if I did do things differently, have a different result, the game would be different, the story would be different. So there are a bunch of little things technically I would like to do differently, but wouldn't wish anything to change of how the story
just to see went. How it would play out.
Just
right?
to see how it play out. Like, yeah. What if you did shoot
exactly.
out this scene, but you would avoid the other scene? What if you did brewing out the goo early? Just so many things could have happened differently. Technical thing was resolve points. Probably would have tweaked that a bit, as in being just use it on the session. So you get that.
I didn't use any.
Yeah.
I didn't use any at all, I don't think.
I think I used one.
It was Tony, Merkaba, and Rian who probably used the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overall.
I keep fucking forgetting about it.
Yeah.
But then resolve points are similar to like when we were playing Gauntlegrim with inspiration, yeah. how we just kept fucking.
Yeah, except I'm pretty sure. I don't know if I actually did or if I was going to use a resolve point to fail a roll.
I think you chose not to use a resolve point when you failed something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember if, yeah, but I swear I have this memory of being like, if I don't fail, I'm going to use a resolve point to fail.
Yeah.
To reroll the roll.
That is also good. All right. I believe we've done for our personal retrospective. What have we got next? I believe we've got some Doug's yawning.
Sorry.
I need the bathroom. So
yep. One moment.
Maybe,
this is the break in the episode. Let me do it. That is our thoughts on the campaign. That is our favorite episodes and scenes. That is our just our general thoughts without being colored by the audience questions that are coming up next. That'll be in part two of this podcast. Thank you for joining us. I have been Andrew the Warden. Doug has been there.
I'm here.
Josh is busting to the toilet.
Yep.
And I'm Sam.
And I'm Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Thank you all for joining us. This is coming out as a two-parter. The first being our thoughts and epilogue scenes. And the next one, we'll get stuck into the listener questions, everything you've been waiting for. We'll see you then. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
Thank you for listening.
Peace.
See ya.
Bye.
And there's been two times where we've recorded for at least 20 minutes and I didn't press the button.
Yep.
That's devastating. Yeah, at least it was 20 minutes. It could have been way worse.
At least it's only two times ever.
Mm. I can't remember what the second time was.
I remember there was that one time where we did like this, such this awesome intro and breakdown and it was really, really good. And then you went, guys, I'm just going to stop you right now. We're not recording.
We're not recording.
we had to do it all again and it just did not sound the same.
It was okay because it was
so
an intro.
Forced.
It was an intro. At least it wasn't the session.
Yeah.
You know, it was just banter. So that was fine. Yeah, one of them was The Haunting of Ypsilon where we did character creation for 20 minutes, rolled all the dice, got to the end. And goes, guys, none of that. We got none of that. Let's do it again.
To like fake roll dice to get the sound and everything.
So I said, okay, just keep what you've rolled on your sheet. But when I say ready to roll, just pretend to roll and but say the number that you previously rolled. So everything was still the same. We just had to, you know, go through it all again.
Role play,
It was.
But it was the intro, so it didn't matter.
I thought I'd waited till the right moment and I didn't.
You're right. We haven't officially started because I haven't shouted hello and welcome into the mic.
I was going to say, my only trepidation with these mics is that now we all sound like John when we're breathing.
Yeah, that's what you have to self-regulate, isn't it?
Take a step back.
I asked
Take
a step
back. No, that's what I mean. Like, I came back into the back of my chair and I'm like...
Yeah.
Not
at the table, Josh. I have to wash that. They're not dry wipe.
Into yourself as well. That's
all right. Give it about 30 minutes and it's like a dry erase. Yeah. It just scrapes right off.
Okay. I'm ready to begin after all that. So, yeah, if you can hear your own breathing, please lean back while I do this intro. And then when I start introducing
into
the characters.
Into the kitchen.
Then, yeah, you just get fuck right off. All right. Here we go. It's been a while since I've had to do this. Been a while. Take your drink. Just have relax.
I'm trying to find a bottle opener. I'm going to use my teeth.
Yeah.
Doug's always equipped.
I remember when I was like, Doug, you seem like the kind of person who's got a bottle opener on his keys.
At all times, yes. Yep. I do, but I don't drink.
I do.
I have two pairs of keys with two bottle openers.
My front incisors.
Oh,
jeez.
Oh, sorry, it's good for you.
Okay. Dangerously close to equipment, but
you're right. It wasn't moist. It was fine. Not as much as Doug. All right, here we go. You may lean back.
Doug, very moist, very not fine.
Yep.
And let me get the right bit because I accidentally included something in there that I didn't want to include.
And when you asked me on Discord whose ship was Arman's ship, or were you talking about the Ramirez and Harper's ship?
Arman's ship.
Oh, that wasn't the Ramirez. The Ramirez was the ship that Harper Kerensky was on.
Yeah. So did you just said Arman's or Harper's ship, so...
I just gave you a ship name that I thought you'd forgotten.
Well, I did forget.
And it wasn't the Ramirez.
All right, well,
so
what,
a little,
what was the name of the ship?
One little cavat. I'll keep this in for confusion thing.
What was the name? I'm going to have to say it as X number of times.
Yep. Hold on. So we're looking at Arman.
Was it the Vostok? Was it
was the Vostok. It was the Vostok. Okay. Yeah.
I had a few options. I didn't know if it was the Dauntless, the Vostok.
Apology, I thought you were asking, what's the name of the ship that we were supposed to look for, sort of
oh,
thing?
Oh, no, no, the ship that the dudes that left.
Yeah, it was the Vostok.
The Vostok, okay.
The people know what you meant.
Why represented by the name of a ship that came to report to the Mercer, the Vostok.
Nice.
Thank you
I
for
looked at my hand.
Raising your hand.
Yep.
You didn't have to, we were already finished, but.
You never know.
It's good to start. I have you mean bad, to continue?
I have bad social
cues.
Etiquette.
I was going to say etiquette, but my etiquette's not that bad. It's just when I'm amongst people that I know.
I'm social menace.
At least you're not ripping farts into the chair.
Yeah, Doug.
I try to be.
Even when you're not here.
These mics will pick it definitely. Right up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There'll be no stealth farts for me anymore.
Welcome to Smell-O-Vision.
Smell-O-Vision. You can taste the gravy.